The original podcast was recorded in German. This podcast was translated using artificial intelligence. Burn Rate, the Venture Insider podcast with Max Meister.
Hello, welcome to Burn Rate, the VC Insider podcast. I'm talking with Maximilian Bulk and Guy Giuffredi about the startup scene with a focus on venture capital. We're up to episode 50 and recording on Wednesday, May 22nd at 21 in the evening. We have an anniversary edition, my friends, episode 50. I remember well when we started in October 2023. When I listened to the first episodes, my hair stands on end. It was super exciting, pioneering work for us, but a lot has already changed. What have been the biggest changes for you since the first episode?
I mean, we had a completely different format. We were together in the studio and you had to be ultra quiet. Now we record from our home studios with Riverside. Since something like 30 episodes or more, that was a real improvement in quality. I think we're also better prepared. And then maybe one of the most important personal changes, last summer, a random stranger approached me at an event and said, "Hey, you're the guy who makes Burn Rate. Mega cool." For me, this was a big surprise. Now it's completely normal. At a startup, many people tell me, "You are one of the hosts of Burn Rate. Cool, I hear it in the gym. I hear it when I'm cycling. I listen to you while driving." It's still funny to go from not being a public person to becoming a public person in our ecosystem.
Absolutely. I'm often asked, how are you going to develop? Are you going to do video visuals? We're a bit torn about that. I recently had the opportunity to take part in a podcast, which was recorded and then published on YouTube. That is certainly an aspect or a topic that we could change. We recently started producing in English, or rather we use AI to translate our voice and the content directly. We published it for the first time last week, and the feedback was very positive. It's a bit awkward to hear your own artificial voice, but it's actually not bad at all, almost better than us live in English. But from that point of view, there is still room for development. We're excited to see how it goes. In any case, we're very pleased that you've joined us. We count on a very loyal audience, which of course makes us very, very happy. Also, on a positive note, we can announce a new partner today, namely the Upscaler program. If you want to scale quickly and successfully with a startup and not just grow, then the Upscaler program is just right for you. It gives you access to our large pool of experts. Over 50 startups have already benefited from more than 500 workshops and scaled their business both nationally and internationally. You can take a look for yourself at www.upscaler.ch. Yes, I'm very pleased that we can announce Upscaler as a new partner here. They really are a top sponsor with a lot of experience. We will also record dedicated episodes with them and talk about startups that are in the program together with Peter Stahli, the head of the Upscaler program. Great stuff. Let's go to the podcast. Guy, what are we talking about today?
Today in the news, we have the mass layoff at Climeworks, then NVIDIA investing in quantum technologies and the new MIT Accelerator program in Switzerland. In the main topic, we look at the quiet rise of the Swiss venture capital scene in the year 2025. And then we look at the crowdfunding campaign of Perivision on Omnium, our partner. And then as the transaction of the week, we take the 42 million Series B from Actia, respectively, now Hilo.
Exactly. Let's move on to the news of the week. You said it, mass redundancies at Climeworks. We don't just want to announce good news here, but also perhaps less positive news. And in the last few days, the cleantech startup Climeworks has hit the headlines, but not in a positive sense. The company, which specializes in direct air capture DAC, i.e. the capture of CO2 directly from the ambient air, was confronted with a wave of critical reporting. You may have read it. It was actually published everywhere in 20 minutes in the NZZ very widely and also well commented on, but Blick also reported on it. So it was actually very widely discussed and debated. The reason for the development is the disappointing performance data of their Icelandic plants, as well as economic difficulties, which will lead to planned job cuts of over 10%. In Switzerland, this is legally a mass redundancy, a report from Iceland also revealed that the new mammoth plant, designed for an annual capacity of 36,000 tons of CO2, captured just 750 tons in its first 10 months, and a net figure of just 105 tons when supply chain emissions are taken into account. The older Orca plant has apparently not reached its target values either. In addition, the cost per ton of CO2 is currently around $1,000, making the target of $100 per ton a distant prospect. Given the massive discrepancy between announced capacities and actual CO2 removals, is this a typical scaling pain we are seeing here of a young technology or Climeworks simply overstating its performance promises?
Yes, I think it's a bit of both. On the one hand, we're actually experiencing typical scaling pains at Climeworks. I mean, direct air capture is extremely technologically demanding. It is extremely capital intensive and also operates in a market that is still in its infancy in regulatory and economic terms. And that's in today's environment where sustainability has taken a bit of a back seat again. There are delays and there are major uncertainties and also an increase in personnel. To be honest, I'm not that surprised. And perhaps the performance promise. I would also say that Climeworks has massively raised expectations in recent years and perhaps set targets that are a little too ambitious from today's perspective. In recent years, the media and political pressure has been extremely high to quickly present solutions for CO2 removal, i.e. CO2 removal from the air. And Climeworks was extremely good at positioning itself as a global flagship technology. And it needed a lot of visibility, a lot of capital. They raised $600 million in 2022 and became a unicorn. They had a lot of political support, so it's not surprising that this mass layoff is being communicated extremely prominently today. I mean, anyone who exposes themselves to the media like this has an extremely high risk of falling, and the expectations are immense. But I do hope that Climeworks, with the cost cuts they are now making, with the mass redundancies they have made early enough, and can now put themselves in a position of strength from which they can effectively develop the technology to the level they want to get to and then grow sustainably from there.
Yes, I was able to have lunch with an investor today and he gave me a few more insights, which of course I can't communicate here. But I also believe that the whole thing wasn't communicated in the best possible way. You know that a mass dismissal is always commented on very critically in the media, and perhaps it could have been done a little differently because I don't think the statements made by the management were ideal, in my opinion. I know it's always very difficult in situations like this, especially when negative news comes out. But I don't think it was necessarily managed professionally. It's not necessarily the core competence of founders to perform in a situation like this. But it's worth it. Once again, we have seen that you need to invest in communication and at least get professional help when something like this happens so that you are ready to shoot. And that was probably not ideal here. I also spoke to representatives of ETH and wanted to know, yes, is this all just hot air in the truest sense of the word, or does Climeworks really have potential? And the answers there are very different. Some are still firmly convinced that it really could become an absolute unicorn with a lot of potential, while others have become more critical. So I think there are more critical voices today than there were a few years ago, but it's always like that. And that doesn't mean that Climeworks won't be a success. But I do believe that the air has become thinner and you have to be able to communicate success stories relatively quickly. Otherwise, it could become critical for the company and for follow-up financing or for the going concern. That about Climeworks. We will stay on top of this and, of course, try to obtain more information. Then we come to the second piece of news. The traditional Swiss boarding school La Rosy is entering into a partnership with MIT Design X, MIT's venture accelerator. Together, they are launching an innovation program on the campus in Roll to bring MIT's entrepreneurial spirit to Europe. The aim is to promote early stage startup projects from all over the world in an inspiring environment, or so they say, that combines academic excellence with international entrepreneurship. Participants are given access to methodology, coaching and mentoring according to MIT standards, and at the same time benefit from the exclusive La Rosy network. It looks like a win-win situation. Representatives of LaRosie told me that the initiative is not only intended to promote talent, but also to give Switzerland new impetus as a location for innovation. Guy, what do you think it takes for such programs to be more than just marketing and really generate impact in the Swiss startup scene?
I've written down a few points that are especially important for the first batch. The first batch is always extremely relevant for such programs. They really have to take on top ideas, and that's where they are now with the call they have made. So I would say, check, you're on the right track. They have to manage to combine the horsepower of the two institutions and bring it to the ground so that the horses jump in the same direction and not any particular interests of LaRosie or MIT come to the fore. In other words, LaRosie's network and MIT's innovative strength and program must be brought together in a meaningful way. And yes, ultimately, it's all about the Swiss startup scene, and accordingly, it means that it must somehow become an open program, and in the end, the startups must also be integrated into the ecosystem. And in the end, that means organizing good pitching events where participants in the ecosystem are invited to get involved in this exclusive network of LaRosie and MIT.
Absolutely. We're excited to see what happens next. Let's move on to another exciting case from the tech world. NVIDIA, known for its leading role in AI and graphics processors, is in advanced talks to invest in the quantum computing startup PsiQuantum. PsiQuantum takes an innovative approach by using photons as qubits and relying on conventional semiconductor manufacturing techniques. The company plans to build quantum computers in Brisbane and Chicago and recently launched a $750 million funding round led by BlackRock at a valuation of a hefty $6 billion. Given NVIDIA's previous reluctance to embrace quantum computing, as Jensen Huang recently said in a speech, he said practical applications are still 20 years away. How do you interpret this change in strategy? Is it a sign of a paradigm shift or rather a hedge against future developments?
Yes, I see it more as a hedge for the future, and so that NVIDIA is simply up to date with what's happening in the quantum field. I mean, what is an investment of a few hundred millions for NVIDIA at a paltry valuation of $6 billion? I mean, for NVIDIA, with a net profit of more than $70 billion in 2024 and a market capitalization, I just looked it up this afternoon, of almost $3.5 trillion. That's only a fraction of what they're investing for a hedge check in the next technology.
Yes, I was a bit surprised because Jensen Huang was very clear in his statement. He said that quantum is exciting, but as I said, a practical application won't be feasible for another 20 years. So for me, he completely denied the developments in quantum and now the investment. I find that interesting. But let's see how it goes from there.
I also think Jensen Huang said, hey, that's still a long, long way off because he just wanted to protect the great stock market price of his own company, NVIDIA, and perhaps soften the hype that there was a few months ago about quantum constantly setting new milestones. So he just wanted to categorize it and just communicated it to the other extreme than the media did.
Close your financing round faster and more successfully with Omnium. Our partner Omnium is an innovative platform for growth financing. Omnium is the one-stop shop for financing rounds as they offer a completely digital, streamlined and cost-efficient process, including legal framework, investor KYC and payment processing. Those who raise with Omnium have the choice to do a private round and only use the platform for their investment opportunity. Or they can choose the private round plus with additional access to 10,000 registered investors. If you want to make a high-profile round with the broadest possible impact, choose the public round, where the offer is made available to all investors. With Omnium, you can close your financing round faster and more successfully. Do you want to scale your startup quickly and successfully and not just grow? Then the Upscaler program is just right for you. It gives you access to our large pool of founders, entrepreneurs, and suitable investors. Over 50 startups have already benefited from more than 500 workshops and scaled their business both nationally and internationally. Would you also like to benefit from this personal and individual support? You can find all the information at www.upscaler.ch.
Let's move on to the main topic, which is my current Meistermacher column in Bilanz. I discuss the quiet rise of the Swiss VC scene in 2025. While the US tech sector is struggling with political instability, economic uncertainty, and strategic reorientation, Switzerland is positioning itself as an attractive location for investments in deep tech, industrial AI, and B2B software. The combination of political stability in this country, technological excellence, and entrepreneurial maturity makes Switzerland a preferred destination for international investors. However, the question arises as to whether Switzerland is in a position to mobilize sufficient capital of its own to sustainably support this upswing. Yes, let's go to Media Ceres. How can Switzerland now encourage more instis, i.e., institutional investors such as pension funds, to invest more in VC in order to reduce its dependence on foreign capital? What do you think, Guy?
Yes, of course, it's not that easy. I mean, in the, 2022 pension funds were first allowed to invest in VC, and we all know how hesitantly that got off the ground. Perhaps we should now have the courage to tighten the screw a little and then say, hey, by 2030 or 2035, pension funds must invest at least 1%, up to a maximum of 5% in VC. That would certainly speed things up. Then we'll have the issue that pension funds simply don't know their way around the VC market, and they're completely invisible. I mean, I haven't met a single pension fund manager at a startup event in the last years. Perhaps there is simply still a lack of a credible platform here where fund managers can engage with the ecosystem, exchange ideas, and find out where they should invest and how it works. And thirdly, I've also made a note of the fact that perhaps we also need to introduce incentive mechanisms for fund managers. I mean, they may be there for another 5 years, but the fund goes on for 10 or 15 years until it is successful. And in 5 years, there may still be the J curve. And then they were only at risk and never had the opportunity to upside. Perhaps pension funds should somehow offer an appropriate incentive scheme that includes the time when the manager leaves the pension fund. But of course, you have to be extremely careful when you put something like this out there that you don't create incentives that allow pension fund managers to simply squander money senselessly and get caught up in euphoria.
Yes, exactly. I do believe that it has a lot to do with risk capacity and risk acceptance. I recently had a lengthy discussion with a pension fund manager who runs a large pension fund. And he said, look, if I only want to make one investment in alternatives, we're not even talking about VC. We're talking about real estate and maybe hedge funds. But even then, he has to justify himself massively to the investment committee for doing something like this. He said, look, I have achieved a sensational return on my pension fund. The last few years have also shown me that, but then I got hung up on one investment in a biotech, which went wrong. And that's a huge problem. And when I talk to Anglo-Saxon pension fund managers, they say, look, I can invest 5% of the allocation of all of the pension fund assets completely freely, and I will not be harmed in my personal target. So they are more or less free. It's not everywhere like that. I also spoke to two pension fund managers independently. One was responsible for the pension fund of a British company, and the other was responsible for the US endowment fund, i.e. a fund of a major university. And they can both freely dispose of up to a certain amount. It's a small amount. We're talking about less than 50 million here. And if things go wrong, it's not counted against them. On the other hand, if things go well, they still have the performance. This means they can take other risks and won't get hit on the head if they miss the mark. Fun fact, both have benefited massively from this in the last 5 years, and their investments in this pocket have been extremely successful. Of course, that was between 2018 and 2021 when you could hardly go wrong in VC. But I still find that interesting. I think that's the mechanism. We need to work more on risk aversion here, and you probably won't get that out so quickly. And that's why I'm not skeptical about pension funds, but I'm cautiously optimistic that this will change so quickly. Of course, I wish it would. But a lot still needs to happen.
You may also have seen today in the FT Financial Times, Donald Trump considers order to open US retirement plans to private equity. So there is something going on again, and perhaps we should simply push Guy Parmelin a little more in this direction.
Absolutely. Let's stay with the article for a moment, maybe move away from money a little bit to the areas. And my question to you as a really outstanding VC, where does Switzerland have the potential to take on a leading role? In which areas do you see potential, especially for Switzerland?
We clearly have the areas of AI and quantum, which we also take up again and again here in the podcast. We already portrayed many startups. We are top in many areas, actually in all the areas where we have ETH, EPFL, the University of Basel, the University of Zurich, and also the University of Bern and the other universities, which have top researchers and are driving innovation forward. We are very well positioned almost everywhere, and not just in these two areas. We are also extremely strong in robotics. We have Anybotics, Swiss Mile Robotics, Acento, and so on. We have traditionally been extremely strong in life sciences and biotech. We must not lose sight of the fact that we are still strong here, and we have already been able to communicate many exits. Then, of course, we are in the new sector that is very close to my heart, life science AI, i.e. the interface between artificial intelligence and the natural sciences and also health tech. We are extremely well positioned in this area. We actually have cutting-edge research in almost all universities, many patents, many publications, and also teams that are extremely hungry to disrupt the pharmaceutical industry a little, or at least the development processes. And then we are also good at finding out whether we are really leading the way. Trust tech, I mean, Switzerland is very trustworthy everywhere. Cybersecurity, climate technologies, we were just talking about Climeworks earlier. I mean, this is still a cutting-edge technology, and we are actually very strong also in material technologies. To summarize, we are world champions in innovation, and this has developed over the years. We don't have any natural resources in Switzerland, but our raw material is innovation, and we should build on this to build our future.
Absolutely. You can read the article on bilanz.ch under Meistermacher. We have received a lot of positive feedback and are both convinced that Switzerland is currently in a very good position to benefit and to distinguish itself from the USA and also within Europe. Well, we would like to take this opportunity to present a case that is currently being advertised on the OO Omnium investment platform. Our partner Omnium is an innovative platform for growth financing. Omnium is the one-stop store for financing rounds, as they offer a completely digital, lean, and cost-efficient process, including a legal framework for investors, KYC, and payment processing. Those who raise via Omnium have the choice to do a private round and only use the platform for their investment opportunity, or choose the private round plus with additional access to registered investors. If you want to make a high-profile round with the widest possible reach, choose the public round, where the offer is made available to all investors. Before we go into medias res, we would like to mention that the Omnium platform is a sponsor of Burnrate, and we will not be making a recommendation for an investment. A potential investment by Burnrate listeners is 100% at their discretion, and we are not liable for any loss of capital. Today, we are talking about a promising medtech startup from Switzerland that wants to revolutionize the eye care industry, namely PeriVision. The team led by Patrick Kessel has developed a VR-based platform for eye examinations that is faster, cheaper, and more scalable than traditional methods. The vision is to make eye tests accessible everywhere, from doctor surgeries to retirement homes. The first product, a visual field test via VR goggles, has already been approved in the US, UK, and EU, has sold over 70 devices, and is showing impressive results. The company is now raising 2.5 million Swiss francs to drive its growth forward. So it's high time we took a closer look at this deep tech company. Guy, you met Patrick at the Swiss Art Updates. Did you find out anything exciting last week?
Yes, quite a bit. I've known Patrick and Case for some time, and Patrick knows exactly where he wants to go with PeriVision, and he always makes a very good impression on me. Perhaps briefly on the financing round. With Omnium, they wanted to raise at least 100,000. They did that within 48 hours of going live, and now they're going up to 500,000. The rest of the financing round is done by VCs. I can talk briefly about that later. They have already made around 500,000 francs in sales, as you said, in the USA, the EU, and Switzerland. In England, they are working with NHS partners again so that their test procedure can be integrated as deeply as possible into the system. This partnership seems to be going very well, and there is a lot of interest in rollouts, provided that it works. And I've also noted here that their business model is also very important. They have also planned this very carefully. They don't simply sell a pay-per-use model. That is extremely difficult in this area. Algo, many other startups do that in this space, but they almost can't scale. They sell their VR glasses with the software with a certain service fee, or they have monthly subscriptions. They keep the model as simple as possible so that they can bring as many devices onto the market as possible.
Yes, thank you very much for this tour de raison. Basically, how do you actually rate the scaling potential?
Yes, I mean, Perivision is in a regulated market, and I think the market is very fragmented. I haven't done an in-depth market analysis here. Everyone would have to do that themselves. They always have to have a license, then an insurance code, and then they have to somehow reach the ophthalmology practices in the countries. They are not organized centrally, and that makes scaling much more difficult. Perivision does work with distributors to gain reach and networks. That's the right strategy, but it's not easy to say how quickly they can scale up in Latin America and the USA. I don't think it will simply take off and become a sure success.
Do they have to get a health insurance code or not?
So it's always a good question with devices like this. I always think yes with these cases, because even if they create added value, the end customer, i.e. you or I, don't want to pay extra for any treatment if it's not covered by insurance. And many medtech startups have already failed because of this. And it is therefore important that you have an insurance code so that you can bill health insurance companies. Patrick also told me that they can already be covered by various insurance codes, i.e. your treatment can be covered by various insurance codes, and that this is analyzed depending on the clinical procedure.
The big question is it a VC case or not? I have already asked myself that. I can't answer it conclusively. I think the case is interesting. It has a lot of interesting aspects. I also find the team convincing. Some people with a broad academic background are involved. There are also people who come from industry who have gained a lot of experience in industry and can now contribute this. So there are some exciting aspects to it. And yes, I would say it is one of the most exciting projects. In general, however, I have to openly admit that the projects currently on Omnium are all very exciting. Omnium is having a very good run at the moment, and I find it interesting how they do it, how easy it is to invest when you go on the platform. This is not intended to be a promotional event, but I have also looked into it intensively with the various rounds that I mentioned at the beginning. And it's a great service for startups. And crowd investing has always had a bit of a reputation for not necessarily looking at the most exciting cases, but rather for the cases that would otherwise not find capital from professional investors. And I think that's definitely no longer the case today. There are also a few very capable and interesting crowd investing platforms in Germany and Omnium in Switzerland that shows what's possible if you do it with professional people, if you set it up well, and if you invest in the communication accordingly. Go and have a look. Omnium.ch. We will be presenting another case in the next issue, which is currently being presented on Omnium. Guy, you wanted to say something else?
Yes, exactly. With crowdfunding, we've already had a lot of questions that we haven't answered yet. I mean, I always find it critical when a self-standing round is raised in crowdfunding, i.e. only capital from the crowd, then you don't have anyone professionally assessing the round. And if a VC is on board, as is the case here with Perivision, as Patrick also told me, Zülke, Medcap and Dart Ventures, they also invest in the round, then you at least have a sanity check, as they say, that someone has looked at it professionally and the deal has been checked by someone doing a proper DD. And I think that's a good thing when Omnium takes on a co-investment role. That also means that the rounds are only online for a short time, and you have to decide quickly whether you want to invest. Again, this is not meant to be an investment recommendation, but that's what I've noticed positively.
Absolutely. Very good point. Exactly. So long story short, if you want to make an investment yourself on a crowd investing platform, take a close look at whether other investors, professional investors, are already on board. Thank you very much, Guy. Let's move on to the last but not least transaction of the week, and that is Hilo. Do you say Hilo or Hilo, Guy?
I assume you say Hilo if you're going into English, or Hilo, but we Swiss are allowed to say Hilo.
Yes, let's say Hilo. Let's stick with Swiss English. Hilo, formerly known as Aktia, closed their Series B of $42 million. Wow, that's a really big round. A strong signal for a health tech company from Switzerland. Guy, can you take us through where the company comes from?
Yes, Hilo was founded in 2018 as a spin-off from CSM in Neuenberg. Their first product was a wristband for continuous blood pressure measurement, completely without a cuff, i.e. completely sensor-based. Now, with the rebranding to Hilo, it is clear that they not only want to build a wearable, but also position themselves as a platform for cardiovascular prevention.
The rebranding makes strategic sense. The market for pure wearables is overcrowded. There is a need for differentiation. You're addressing a global health problem, namely high blood pressure, or in technical terms, hypertension. Can you tell us more about this, Guy?
Yes. According to the WHO, 1.4 billion people are affected by hypertension, but more than half of them, 700 million, don't even know about it or are at least inadequately treated. And this is not only a health risk, but it causes enormous costs for the healthcare system if it is diagnosed too late. And the underlying problem today is that blood pressure measurements are taken far too rarely and manually, perhaps once a day at some point when you know you have to take a look. And that's where Hilo comes in. They measure continuously in order to be able to detect anomalies and temporary high blood pressure. And I think that's extremely strong. They are not just relying on the device, but on a data-driven, continuous approach.
I took a closer look at the product. It's a wearable device with an optical sensor that continuously and automatically measures your blood pressure. So it's not a pump, no interaction. You could say you simply wear it, and the data collected is processed in the cloud, where an AI-based analysis takes place. Patients then receive individual feedback, warnings, or even recommendations for action. You are talking about a digital cardiovascular coach? That does indeed sound interesting. And
that's much more than just the device that they started with. They are now building a platform that will connect patients, doctors, and even health insurance companies. So not just monitoring, but in the long term, you also want to offer therapy integration, remote diagnostics, and perhaps even digital interventions.
Yes, that usually requires a lot of capital. A device. And now the extension to the Hilo platform has already reached Series B. Let's take a quick look at our modeled cap table. Hilo has built up a considerable cap table over several financing rounds.
Yes, absolutely. And this is going to be a bit of an enumeration of your chronicle. The financing story began in July 2018, just 2 months after the CSEM spin-off. Translink Capital from Silicon Valley invested, and Red Alpine, renowned Swiss business angels and Canadian investors, and the US Park Street Capital invested. The round was $4 million, and the pre-money valuation at the time was set at just over $5 million.
This seed round was expanded in March 2020 with a further $6 million led by Red Alpine. In addition to the existing investors, Verve, then still under Investier IH Libra from New York, and several other investors joined. The pre-money valuation was set at around 17 million Swiss francs.
Not much later, 18 months, as was usual in the venture sector at the time. The Series A came in November 2021, when they were still able to race at the high of the VC years and the pan-European VC Molten Ventures, then known as Draper Esprit, joined in. They led the $17 million round and were joined by the German health and medtech VC 415 Capital, and existing investors participated again. At that time, the valuation rose to $47 million pre-money. So a very nice equity story right up to here.
Well, ended up to there. When our modeled cap table is correct, in the fourth quarter of 2023, another €27 million was invested over several closings in a Series A too by existing and new investors. The new investor on board was none other than Cosla Ventures, one of the legendary Silicon Valley VCs. The valuation was set at $34 million pre-money in the new environment.
And now, April 2025, their Series B. A real cracker. another $42 million were invested in the company. This time, the round was again filled with huge industry players. Early Bird Health and Wellington Partners led the round, and the K Fund and Natural X Health Ventures joined as further investors. The existing investors have also invested again, and this time the pre-money has been revised upwards to $77 million. If our figures are correct, the round is not yet complete. But that is probably only a matter of time.
Yes. What do you conclude from that the valuation was so volatile? I mean, it went. It was relatively high at 47, then down to 34, now up to 77. That's a massive move. What happened in this? What was the time? That was Q423 to Q125. So it's a year and a half in between if I'm doing the math right, right?
So the jump to the top? What do you mean?
Exactly. What could have happened there?
Yes, I think it's simply market acceptance. I mean, I just heard from a colleague today that the device was recommended to him by a doctor in Switzerland. And I think that means it's very likely that traction is now starting to happen and that they're also hitting somewhere in the region of the sales targets or other KPIs that they promised investors. You promise growth, and if you achieve that, then the valuation is adjusted accordingly, and investors now believe that this can be a success story.
Exactly. Let's take a look at the bottom line. So you're at 100 million Swiss francs that you've raised. And, well, if our figures are correct, you currently have a post-money valuation of 118 million.
If you look at it like that, it looks tough. So not a huge step up in valuation compared to the total capital invested. And if all the investors here have a liquidation preference, let's hope for the team's sake that there's only 1x lick pref. Then the first 100 million at the exit would have to be paid back to the investors first. But they're well capitalized now, aren't they? They have 40 million in their account and can go full throttle. And yes, of course, they now want to drive up the valuation until it comes to Mexi, so that hopefully it will be a good case for everyone.
How much turnover do you think they make today when they call up a valuation of 77? What are the multiples in that area? Have you looked it up?
I haven't looked that up directly, but I'm guessing one. When you look at the industry multiples of listed companies, they are relatively low. But on the venture, which is now probably at the beginning of the growth phase, you certainly have a 20 or even 30 multiple on top of that. So I assume that the company has a turnover of somewhere between 3 and 6 million.
You think so little?
Yes, but it may be that she has already crossed the 10 million mark.
I was a bit higher. I'm around 10. We could find out sometime. Now, of course, there is very good exit potential here. So I think the companies that really manage to reach a critical size will also be taken over. The question is, do they reach the critical size? And where is the critical size internationally? Probably around 20 to 30 million. And they are already innovation leaders. I mean, they are the most advanced in terms of regulation, i.e. at the very forefront, and have managed the hard path to a large extent. And that is precisely the big hurdle that many people fail to overcome. And that is where they are further ahead. And as you mentioned, the service providers, especially the doctors and hospitals, are even recommending the product in some cases, which is interesting. So I can well imagine that Hilo will be a great success story and that we have now actually crossed the Rubicon and are well on the way to becoming a success case for Switzerland. Yes, I think it's remarkable how they've managed this mix of capital and strategic access. The question is perhaps still an interesting one. What are you going to do with the fresh money?
Yes, I got that from official media reports. They want to invest in two areas in particular. Firstly, international scaling. A wonder, of course, the US market is on the radar, and also certain key regions in Europe. And then they want to further expand the platform, push ahead with new features, clinical validations, and also expand their analyses to other disease patterns associated with high blood pressure. Could also be diabetes or kidney disease, for example, where their devices find their applications.
Very good. Yes, that's it for Burn Rate Episode 50, the VC Insider Podcast. If you would like to support our podcast, please subscribe to our newsletter and share it with your network. That would make us very, very happy. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your loyalty. We wish you a great weekend. Take care and goodbye.